Kate McClellan, pro wedding planner with over 16 years of experience helping more than 400 couples down the aisle. I started Planning Collective to help all couples get through the overwhelm of wedding planning by sharing my actionable tips and tools that I've used over the years working with my clients. We'll focus on getting rid of what I like to call FOWO, the fear of wedding oversight. This is an unfortunate condition that almost every couple will suffer from at some point. Let's get you back to enjoying the planning process. Here we go. Hey guys, Kate here. Welcome back to another episode of the Wedding Planning Collective podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how to put together your wedding day timeline. We'll walk through the steps that I take to get to the first draft of your timeline, but please make sure that you're including your vendors in on this conversation. Your planner or day of coordinator, photographer, and venue coordinator should be able to help guide you along the way based on your wedding day details. I'm also going to share some sample timelines for various scenarios to help you get started. You can find those in the Wedding Planning Collective Facebook group or over at planningcollective.com. Let's get into it. With the timeline, we typically start with the ceremony start time and work backwards and then forwards to fill in the rest of the details. There are a few questions that we need the answers to before we really get started, and those are: what time is your ceremony, of course? Will you be doing a first look before the ceremony? If you're not sure what that is or if you're going to be doing a first look or not, please check out episode 12 for more details on my opinion about a first look. Third, we need to know what time cocktail hour or your reception will begin. And then fourth, what time will your reception end? I'm going to start by walking through what's probably the most common breakdown for a wedding where the ceremony and reception are taking place in the same location. So we're going right from the ceremony into cocktail hour. After that, we'll talk about the adjustments that you'll need to make if your ceremony and reception will be in different locations and some other common scenarios that we will often see. So again, we're starting with the ceremony time and we're going to work backwards. So let's say our ceremony is at 6 p.m. In most cases, guests begin to arrive about 30 minutes before the ceremony. So in this case, that would be 5:30. In order to make sure that the wedding party is all tucked away and not seen by the guests, we would need to make sure that they are tucked away by 5:15. Most couples try to get some photos done prior to the ceremony. If you're doing a first look, this would include both sides of the wedding party and, of course, the couple themselves. If you're not doing a first look, then this would be the individual sides of the wedding party and possibly family on both sides. In this scenario, our couple is going to be doing a first look, which you know I love, so we're going to schedule that at 3:30. This gives them just under 2 hours to take photos on site for just the two of them and then also including their wedding party in on the fun. If you'd like to get your family photos out of the way before the ceremony, in this situation, I would say have the family arrive at 4:30, and then you'd have a 45-minute window to get those photos done prior to guests arriving for the ceremony. So if the first look is at 3:30, what time do you need to start getting ready? This is where I see a lot of brides will really underestimate the amount of time that they will need. For the guys, it's super easy. You just roll out of bed, show up, and put a suit or a tux on. But for the ladies, there's a little bit more that's involved in that. I often recommend that you set aside a full hour to put on your wedding gown. So in this scenario, I would say 2:30 is the time that our bride would be putting her dress on. Now, I get a lot of confused looks when I say you need an hour, especially for those brides that have a relatively simple zip-up gown. But let me tell you why I really encourage that you put at least 45 minutes to an hour in the timeline for this point of the day. From the moment you say, "Oh my gosh, it's time to put on my dress," to the moment you are ready to leave the room to go to that first look, it is most likely going to be an hour. For my timelines, I don't find that it's realistic to plan things down to the minute. Even in 5 or 10 minute increments for this part of the day can be very unrealistic. The process of putting on your wedding dress is a little bit more involved than your normal day of getting yourself ready and dressed. So when you say, "Okay, it's time to put on my dress," Most often, I see there are a couple of trips to the restroom, fixing undergarments, stopping for pictures while you are getting ready. This also includes the time that you'll be putting on your jewelry, your shoes, and usually, again, there are a few photos that are taken with the wedding party in the process. So when I say leave yourself 45 minutes to an hour to put on your dress, I mean, again, from the moment you say, all right, it's time to get dressed, through the moment that you are ready for that next step in the timeline. In this situation, it's leaving for the first look. Usually that is going to be about an hour process. I'm not the kind of planner that is going to put in bathroom breaks along the way here. We will build in some buffer time for those things that we know are going to come up. We're just not sure exactly when in the day that is going to happen. In this scenario, if our bride needs to be getting dressed at 2:30, what time does hair and makeup need to start? This is another situation where I often recommend we work backwards from our end time. If our bride is getting dressed at 2:30, I want to add some buffer time in there and say that she needs to be done with hair and makeup by 1:30 or 2 o'clock. Depending on the rest of your day's schedule, that doesn't mean everybody needs to be done at that time, but I like to give 30 to 60 minutes of a buffer in between hair and makeup being done for our bride and when she needs to move on to the next step. The reason for this, again, is we want to have some time built in there in case hair and makeup runs longer than expected. It often happens. And then the one thing couples almost always forget about, you need something to eat at this point. So do not forget about lunch. Do not forget about breakfast. For the ladies, as you're getting ready with hair and makeup, something to pick at. So cut up sandwiches, fruit trays, cheese and crackers. Those are perfect, but we need to make sure we are adding in lunch into our timeline or breakfast if your hair and makeup schedule starts earlier in the day. So again, that buffer time gives our bride some time to get something to eat and just relax a little bit. You'd rather have some extra time to take some deep breaths on your wedding day than feel like you're rushed and don't have time to enjoy the process. Okay, so we know what time hair and makeup needs to wrap up by. How do we know what time they start in the morning? I always refer this question to your specific hair and makeup stylist. Each stylist works at a different pace, so we don't want to force them into either a faster schedule than they would normally have. So in this example, I would have my bride tell the stylist that she has 6 girls for hair, 7 for makeup, or whatever your breakdown may be, and that everybody needs to be done at 1:30. And let them tell you what time they will need to start. If you have a bigger group, they'll most likely be bringing multiple people to help get through the process, but you may only have one stylist coming with you, which means that they would need to start pretty early. If the time they give you seems too early for your liking, see if they can add in an assistant or a second stylist to make the morning run smoother and the start time a little bit more bearable. So what about the guys? Where do they fit into all of this? It really depends on the logistics of where your wedding location is. So for this example, let's say we're at a hotel venue and the guys are getting ready in one of the groomsmen's rooms while the ladies are getting hair and makeup done. I would say they probably wouldn't really have to gather until about noon. Most likely to get something to eat, whether it's room service in the room or going to a hotel restaurant. Again, those guys have it very easy compared to the ladies, but I would recommend that the guys gather about an hour before the photographer is going to arrive so that they can make sure they have all their pieces for their suit or tux, get things together, and again, give them a buffer if anyone is running late. A quick note on photography. How do you know when your photographer should start the day? Just like everything else with the timeline, I typically go from the end time and work our way backwards. But generally speaking, we want our photographer there at least an hour before the bride gets dressed. That way they have time to take photos of your gown hanging in the room, the details of your jewelry, shoes, all of the accessory details that you may want, and they'll also have time to sneak over to the guys' room to get some of those getting ready photos as well before shifting the focus to getting your dress on. If you have a second photographer that's going to be with you that day, usually you'll have one stay with the guys and one go with the girls. If you have a videographer involved, usually their timeline follows very similar to the photographer, though if you don't have as many hours for video, they may come an hour or so later. Another thing to note as we're talking about the getting ready portion of the day, if you have any ladies in your wedding party that have either young kids or newborns, we want to make sure that we're giving them a little bit more flexibility with their timing than some of the other bridesmaids. I typically don't recommend that we have a very detailed hair and makeup schedule. I prefer to just make sure we're moving through our time slots rather than assigning specific times for each girl for hair and makeup. While you can assign the times, don't get too hung up on it if we don't follow that exact order on the wedding day. As long as somebody is sitting down in the seats at the right time, it really doesn't matter who goes in what order. Unless you'll have a few girls that need to step out to take care of kids. If they're breastfeeding, they may need to take a break to pump. So those are the things that we'll want to take into consideration as we're talking about the hair and makeup schedule. That covers the first part of the day if we are having a ceremony and reception in the same location. If that's not the case, we'll obviously need to add in some time for transportation to and from the different venues. This is where that buffer time will often come in handy. While Google Maps may tell you that your ceremony location is just 20 minutes away from where you'll be getting ready, I would make sure that you have at least 30 minutes in your timeline for transportation. Similar to our dress scenario, if we have in our timeline that the shuttle needs to leave at 2:30 with the ladies, I'll see that 2:30 is the time that you're leaving the hotel room or the house to make your way to the shuttle. Without fail, there's always a bridesmaid that forgets something in the room or in the house and has to go back. So from the time you're actually pulling away on the shuttle to head to the ceremony, it's usually another 10 minutes or so. In addition to that, limos and shuttle buses typically take a little bit longer to get from point A to point B. I'm sure we've all flown past them on the freeway wondering why they're going so slow. So make sure that you're adding in another 5 to 10 minutes in just driving time when you're in a chauffeured vehicle. Talking about the ceremony timing itself, this is of course going to depend greatly on the type of service that you're going to have. For non-religious ceremonies or ceremonies that are happening outside of a religious institution, we typically see it's going to be a 20 to 30 minute ceremony. If you're at a religious institution, usually we're looking at a longer service, closer to 45 minutes or an hour. If you have a ceremony that is mixing cultures, it may be a little bit longer than that. So make sure that you are talking to your officiant about the approximate length of the ceremony to make sure that the rest of the day and evening is filled out accordingly. Going back to our example, our ceremony is at 6 p.m. We are not in a religious institution, so I have listed in our timeline that our ceremony will conclude at 6:30. The guests will immediately then go to cocktail hour from there. Typically, we'll have the wedding party and immediate family stick around for any family photos in the ceremony location, but other than that, we keep things moving and have the party start with cocktail hour. If you are in a religious institution or your ceremony is somewhere other than where your reception will take place, make sure that you ask how long you have following the ceremony to take pictures. Some spaces have a pretty tight booking schedule, so you may only have 10 to 15 minutes following the ceremony to get these things done. In that case, you may want to find another location for your family photos. If you haven't done a first look, this is the only time that you'll have to do photos of the two of you together. You want to make the most of it, but you also don't want to keep your guests waiting. Anything over an hour and 15 minutes or so for cocktail hour can leave the guests feeling restless and ready for the party to get started. If you keep them waiting too long, they're more likely to head out soon after dinner and not stick around for the party. In my timelines, I usually allow for cocktail hour for about 45 minutes before we start encouraging the guests to take their seats. So in our scenario here, at about 7:15 is when we would ask the DJ to make an announcement for people to start finding their way to their tables. If you have a large guest count and your cocktail hour is in a different location than the reception, give a little bit more time for guests to find their seats and make their way to their dinner tables. Next up, we typically have our couple and or wedding party announced into the reception. This is usually about a 5-minute process or so, but if you have a rowdy group, maybe add an extra 5 or 10 minutes in there as well. After you're announced into the reception, there are a few variations of what can happen at this point. Some couples will go right into their first dance, and if it's a Jewish service, sometimes this is where we'll do the hora. Most commonly, though, our couple will either go right to their seats and we'll get into the speeches or the toasts, or they'll go right to cutting the cake. How do you decide if you want to cut your cake before or after dinner? Most venues are going to encourage couples to go right in and cut the cake. They do this because they need to have plenty of time to pull the cake to the back kitchen and cut and plate it to serve to the guests following dinner. So if you want your cake served plated to the guests at their seats right after dinner, you will need to cut your cake before toasts and the dinner service. However, if you're doing a sweets table or a desserts display, you can hold off on cutting your cake until after dinner. This can be beneficial if your cocktail hour is in a different room than your reception and you love your cake, you want to have some time for it to be on display. If everyone's just coming into the room as you're being announced, you don't really have much time for the cake to be on display if you cut it and then pull it to the back right before dinner service. We see either option. They're both fairly common. Talk to your venue or your caterer about when your cake will be served, and they can help you decide if you should cut the cake before or after dinner. A quick note on wedding toasts or speeches. Most commonly, we will have a welcome from the parents, either side of the parents, or sometimes both. A maid of honor and a best man will also give toasts. If you have anything more than that, I would recommend requesting somebody speak at the rehearsal rather than the reception. Your guest's attention span will go very quickly, so you don't want them sitting through 30 to 45 minutes of speeches. Each person talking should try to stick to 2 to 3 minutes each. It might seem like it's very doable, but once you give them that microphone, you can't cut them off. So make sure they know that if they start rambling on and on, their dinner is getting cold in the back. Usually that helps rein in the dads. The last thing to add in after the toast before dinner service begins would be a blessing over the meal if you choose to do so. And then after that, dinner service can begin. So going back to our example of our timeline, we have the wedding party being announced in at 7:30, followed by a welcome by the parents. Then we have our toast by our maid of honor and best man at approximately 7:45, followed by a blessing by the priest, and then dinner service would start at 8 o'clock. At this time of the day, I want you to make a note of when the sunset is scheduled for your wedding day. Of course, depending on your location and preferences, you may or may not want to step outside for sunset photos, but it's always good to note this just to make sure if there's any remaining outdoor photos that you want to take at this point, you have them in the list and you know what time you're going to be losing daylight. So in this case, I have it written down at 8:30, which means our bride and groom in this scenario would be served dinner and then our photographer would sneak out with them to take some sunset photos. I typically allow an hour for dinner service. However, depending on how many courses and your style of dinner, along with the number of guests that need to be fed, are going to play into how long the dinner service actually is. There's usually a pretty clear vibe when people are done eating and they're ready to get started with the dancing. So your vendor team will be keeping an eye on that and getting the dancing started whenever is appropriate. In this example, I have our first dance starting at 9 o'clock, but if we get close to 9 o'clock and everybody is still finishing their entrees, we're gonna connect with the vendor team and say, hey, let's give it another 10 or 15 minutes and start the dancing at 9:15. So once dinner is served, it's more or less an order of events as opposed to an exact timeline. One thing to go back to before we move on from dinner service is that it's really important to give your vendors time for dinner. We've talked about vendor meals in the past, but we haven't really discussed the timing of it. For your photographer, videographer, DJ, or band, the closer they can eat to the guest's dinner service, the better. Most venues will serve the vendors last, and I completely understand the mindset behind that. We're not guests at your wedding. The guests should always come first. However, if you have a tight time frame for dinner, maybe a lot of toasts going on, or the other weekend we had a program with Indian dances going on throughout the dinner service for the guests, we need to be very specific about when the vendors are going to eat. You need to make sure that they have at least 30 minutes to eat and that the venue is ready to serve their meals at that time. Some vendors will request that their meals are served immediately following the head table so that as soon as you're done eating and up and moving around the room, they will also be ready to start capturing the day or ready to get the music going. Just something to think about so that when you are ready for your first dance, your photographer isn't just getting their dinner. Following dinner, usually our couple is going to start things off by either cutting the cake, if we did not do that prior to dinner service, or they're going to start with their first dance. This is usually followed by a father-daughter dance and a mother-son dance. So in our schedule, we have that at 9 o'clock, the father-daughter dance at 9:05, mother-son at 9:10. If you're doing an anniversary dance, now would be the time to add that in as your dance floor is opening up. We're not seeing as many garter and bouquet tosses as we used to, but if you do plan on doing that, I usually recommend that a little bit later in the evening, but before your photographer and videographer depart for the night. In this example, our dance floor would be opening at about 9:15 at night. And remember when we were talking about the photographer's start time and end time? This is where we will add in their end time and then work backwards to make sure that the number of hours you have booked for them works for your start and finish time. You want to plan on having the photographer there for about 30 to 60 minutes after the scheduled dance floor is open. Most couples don't want too much more of the dancing covered. Once the bar's been open for a few hours, that's usually not when you want photos taken. So in this scenario, if our dance floor is opening at 9:15, I would have our photographer scheduled to leave at 10. That gives us enough buffer room that if we start things a little bit later with the dancing, they're still there to cover all the formal dances, but we certainly don't need them through the end of the night. And if our event in this scenario ends at midnight, that gives us the standard 2.5 hour dance floor, which is usually plenty of time for the guests to dance and have fun. Towards the end of the night, if your guests are staying somewhere other than the reception venue, you'll probably want to add in your shuttle times so that they know when they can get a ride back to the hotel. Additionally, if you're doing a late night snack for your guests, I usually recommend that that is added in about an hour and a half before the end of the night. You don't want it to be served too close to dinner being done because people won't eat it, but you don't want it to be out so late that most of the guests have already left. You're also going to want to look at your venue contracts to see if and when you need to add in any bar closure times and if the bar needs to close a half an hour or so before the end of the night. There you go. You should have a pretty good start to your timeline going now. Of course, there are many different variations that we've talked about throughout this episode, but make sure that you grab the sample timelines that I have shared on the Wedding Planning Collective Facebook group or over at planningcollective.com. I have sample timelines there that involve a gap between your ceremony and your reception, an option for a timeline if you are not doing a first look, some additional notes you want to consider if you're having a Jewish ceremony, and then also an option if you're having a multiple day or multicultural wedding. All those samples, again, are listed over on planningcollective.com, or you can find them in the Wedding Planning Collective Facebook group. If you have any questions that you'd like to chat about, or maybe you want to go through your specific timeline, join me in the Planning Collective membership, where we have weekly wedding planning Zoom chats. There I can help you out with any specific questions or struggles that you're having with your wedding plans. You'll also get access to the Wedding Planning Blueprint course that will help you avoid FOWO, or the fear of wedding oversight. And if you found this podcast helpful, I would love it if you would give me a quick review. It would mean the world to me, and it would help other couples find the wedding planning tips and support they need. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I will see you in the next episode.